Okay, so we're ready to start. We're on Daf Kufin Chesamid Aleph today, beginning of Perek Hashoah. Perek Hashoah, the Mishnah says, Shoah l'adam mechaveh v'chadei yayin v'chadei shemri. And borrow on Shabbos, one person from his friend, jugs of wine or jugs of oil will go bad, but there's one condition. What's the condition? Shlo yama lo haveni. He's not allowed to say Yaloshana Halba'a. You can't say I want you to loan it to me. And similarly a woman can borrow from her friend, her neighbor, loaves of bread. And then the Mishnah goes on to say that they could make some sort of a cheshbon after Shabbos. Okay, so Rashi explains that the reason why the Lashon has to be a Lashon of Shoel and not a Lashon of Halveni is because Stam Halva Lamid Yom. Normally a loan is for a 30-day period. Since it's not going to be reclaimed for a long period of time, for 30 days, Asi Malvid said, Liksav al Pinkaso. The Malvid, the lender, might actually end up recording the loan and it'll be over on Kasiva. So therefore, the nature of the prohibition is a Gezeira Shema Yiftov that maybe you're going to come and write. Now, Tosfos has a kasha on the explanation of Rashi because it appears from the Gemara in Menachos and the Mem Dalet Amud Aleph that even something which is sha'ul, even something which is borrowed through a lashon of she'ela, also is generally assumed to remain with the borrower for a 30-day period, and that's the reason why talis she'ula called Lamed Yom Petuvim in a Tzitzis, that one borrows the talis, it does not require tzitzis for 30 days. If one rents out a house, which we're assuming is sort of in the same category, one would be patur min a mezuzah for 30 days. So Tosis gives an answer, according to Rashi, that even if it generally is for a 30-day period, nonetheless, it can be claimed within the 30-day period, and that's a possible distinction. And then Tosis brings the Ri, who gives a totally different explanation of the din in the Gemara. And the Ri says that in the time of the Sheila, the reason why Sheila is considered to be less problematic if you borrow Belashon Sheila on Shabbos is the Bishi Chazeres Be'ein, since it generally, if you are Shoel something, so Shoel returns the actual object that he borrowed. So therefore, lo asi the Mechtov, you're not as likely to write it down because it doesn't need to be written. It's recorded in the object itself. That res ipsa loquitur, the object speaks for itself, that it's the actual object that's going to be returned. Have a lashon haba'a, but if you use a lashon of halba'a, ein chozer ve'ein, normally that implies, like if you halba'a is normally associated, for example, with borrowing money, so you don't return the exact same money, it's a novel hotza nitna, you're going to spend the money and you'll return different money, since it's not chozer ve'ein. Therefore, basi lemichtav, the object doesn't record itself, and therefore, you're more likely to come to write it down. And even though in this particular case we're talking about a she'ela that's not going to actually return intact because what's being borrowed is kadei yayin mekadei shemen, jugs of wine and oil that are actually going to be depleted, they're going to be utilized, the lo hadri be'ein, mikol makom mitok shehizkir the lashon she'ela, but since the actual lashon that's used is a lashon of she'ela zaku hu v'lo asi lemechtav, therefore that's going to cause the lender to remember that this is somehow being done differently. It's being done like a she'ela that doesn't have all of the business implications of a halva, even if it is similarly structured in this particular case, because the actual object is going to be utilized. So therefore, Zachavu Huvaloasi the Mipta is going to remember not to write on Shabbos. So it's sort of interesting because how this plays out Bisman Hazeh is complicated, since we don't all speak to each other in Lashon HaKodesh. We don't all say, we don't all use Lashon She'ela. We don't say, can I be Shoel this from you? We don't say, can Halveni, please give this to me as a halva'a. Normally we speak to each other in English. So how does it play out, this halacha, when you're speaking to each other, b'loshon laz? So the Ran already notes this issue, and the Ran says that the b'loshon laz, we don't really have words that distinguish so much between she'ela and hova'a. We don't have similar verbs that would connote the same types of connotations, and therefore, v'lashon la'az, there is no real distinction between either one of them. Since there's no distinction between either one of them, we have to worry that both types of phraseologies would be problematic, and therefore it's better to say tenli, to just say, give it to me. You go into your neighbor's house, you say, can you give me some sugar? Can you give me a bottle of wine? Can you give me a canister of oil? This way you avert those various problems. Now you might say, well, you create other problems, because there's a Mordechai in Maseches Beitzah, in the second paragraph of Maseches Beitzah, where the Mordechai says that the only time that you're allowed to give a matana on Shabbos is if it's Letzorach Mitzvah. Like, for example, if you're going to take somebody's lulav in order to be able to be yotzei the mitzvah of netilas lulav, and the lulav has to belong to you in the first days of Sukkot, so that has to be received as a matana. But otherwise, says the Mordechai, not for the fact that you have a tzorach Shabbos or a tzorach yantiv, it would be prohibited to give a matana. So tein, on its face, appears to be a lashon matana. You could say, well, who came up with this solution? This is the Ran coming up with this solution. So the Ran, the second parak of the Beitza, seems to indicate that matana is only a problem if there's mamish like a kinyan suder. If you don't have a kinyan suder, you don't make a fancy schmancy kinyan ceremony out of it. So the Ran in his lashon seems to indicate this is in connection with someone who forgets to make an Erev Tavshilin and gives from their kemach to somebody else. So that's the sugya, which prompts this discussion. So the Ran says, yeah, so when it's given, it has to just be given mashicha and without a kinyan suder. So the Ran indicates that if there's no kinyan suder, so you don't have a problem. So then it's understood, perhaps it's the Ran l'shitaso. The Ran says you get out of the problem if you say 10, because the Ran doesn't hold that as long as there's no kinyan suder involved, there's no problem with matana. But if you assume like the Mordechai, the Mishnah Berurah assumes that way, the Mishnah Berurah and Siman Shin Vav, Anishin Simon Shin Chav Gimel quotes this halacha that normally you're not supposed to give a matana on Shabbos. So then how do you get out of the problem? So you have to say that obviously this would only be permissible, even to use the lashon of tenli, if it's going to be done in a fashion in which you're taking something that's Letzorach Shabbos. You're walking into your friend's house because you need the sugar for Shabbos, you need the wine for Shabbos, you need the oil for Shabbos. So as long as it's Letzorach Shabbos, so then even the concern of the Mordechai would be satisfied, and presumably that would be okay. But is it really true? Yes?
Isn't there a distinction between Tzorach Shabbos and Tzorach Mitzvah? Because the sugar isn't necessarily a tzorach mitzvah of Shabbos. If it's for your cake or your coffee, that's for your cake, that's a tzorach mitzvah of Shabbos.
You think he uses the lashon with tzorach Shabbos, but that's it. That is a tzorach mitzvah. Onik Shabbos, we assume, is a tzorach mitzvah by definition. So it's all hainu hach in this type of a circumstance, presumably. Yes?
I don't see the distinction between the kinyan sudor and the kinyan shicha. Why is one not allowed to...
Shicha, you're just taking something. It doesn't appear like you're doing any kind of... It doesn't appear like a ma'aseh kinyan. I just take an object and I move it into my possession. It looks like just a normal, everyday occurrence. It doesn't look like any kind of specially staged ritual. You know, if you have a kinyan sudor, that's already a staged ritual. Like you had a chassan's tish, where the chassan has to pick up the handkerchief and evidence that he's making a real commitment, he's making a real kinyan, so therefore that has more of a ritualistic aspect to it. That's the mashmos of the Ran. The Ran seems to indicate that there's more of a problem with the kinyan suda. That's his lashon.
So like with Mecca from Impar, I can do it if I don't do a kinyan suda?
Well, he's talking about a matana. There's no money that's being exchanged. Yeah. You're just taking an object. So that's what appears in the lashon of the Ran. It's interesting because some quote the Ran as being the one who's the makkah for this din, that you can't give him a matana on Shabbos. You look at the Ran. So the Ran does say that you can't do it normally with a kinyan suder. The Ran seems to be saying himself, so you can't do it with a kinyan suder. But the Ran otherwise, as long as it's not being done in that fashion, seems to indicate that it's not necessarily problematic. But anyway, this whole question. Okay, yes?
No. Sorry, it just seems that he's, the concept is that, at least in our mission, is that he's going to give presumably something back after Shabbos or Yom Tov. He's going to pay it back somehow. That's why he's actually going to borrow it. So maybe Matana, which you're not expecting to get anything back, it would be a completely different case. It would be
So you could say like this. You could say that maybe if you look in the Taz, the Taz says in Siman Shin Zayin, the Taz says that not only are you allowed to say Tenli, not only are you allowed to say give it to me, but you could even say Be'echsolach, and I'm going to return it to you. So it sounds like it's a special heter. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes this Taz in Siman Shin Zayin as well. You look in the Pri Megadim, the Pri Megadim, based on the wording of the Magid Avam, says, but you have to use Lashonos that are not Lashonos of Mekach Lememker. So you say ten, but Be'exor, as opposed to Halveni Be'eparah, as opposed to give me a Havah and I will repay you. So it sounds a little bit like the Tein Be'exor going together, not like there's some special heter. Oh, and you can also say Be'exor, but maybe this is Gupa, the formulation. So it could be that maybe, since technically speaking, she'ela is perfectly permissible, even if we have some sort of a gezerah that we don't allow matana, based on the Ron with the Kinyan Sudo or the Mordechai when there isn't the Tzorach Shabbos, we say that it's a general matter, you're supposed to stay away from matana. They talk about this in the context of giving gifts to a bar mitzvah bachur or to a chassan. Some are mekel, they say tzorach mitzvah, and others say no, you didn't have to necessarily give him a ton on Shabbos. He could have been machnet before Shabbos. He should be machnet before Shabbos and not give him a ton on Shabbos, even if it's a tzorach mitzvah. If it could have been done beforehand, you shouldn't do it. So maybe it's you could say that this idea of saying tein ve'echsor is dafka, and not just that it's some sort of a heter, like the Taz indicates, that you could even say ve'echsor lach, but maybe this is gufa, better because it makes it clear that this is not like a regular matana. Really, this is a she'ela, but because of the fact that you don't have the terminology to utilize in a lashon laz to say a word which is similar to she'ela, so we let you say ten, but you add on the exo in order to make it clear this isn't a real matana that I'm asking for. This is kind of like a hava. I just don't have the words for it. So since I don't have the regular words for it, I'm going to use give me. And then, but I'll say, but I'm going to return it. But I'm going to return to you after Shabbos. So if you actually say that full formulation, maybe it's actually better that way because you're taking it out of the realm of matana and you're making it clear that your lashon of ten, your lashon, obviously we're talking b'lashon laz, the lashon of give it to me, is intended to reside in the realm of borrowing, but just you're using the right formulation. You can argue that maybe in the English language we do have words that appropriately correspond. Meaning that the laws that the Ron was talking about was in English per se, but in English we have the word lend and we have the word borrow. So the word lend generally does correspond more to you're lending me money and I may not return the same object, and the word borrow corresponds more to the notion of I'm going to borrow an object and I'm going to return the exact same object, like I borrow a shovel. So maybe in the English language, if we say that the whole thing is toloi on the lashon, which is utilized in the connotation of the lashon, the way that the Rishon says, the Tosfos, that it's all dependent upon the lashon and not whether something is normally 30 days and something and the other one is not normally 30 days. So maybe in English we could say that it does make sense to distinguish, and that as long as you say I want to borrow as opposed to I want to that I want you to lend me, so maybe that should be okay, because borrowing also, I think so, in the English language has the connotation, normally I'm going to return the exact same object to you. So maybe then it should be okay. But if I understand like Rashi, that the whole distinction between the Lashon of She'ela and the Lashon of Halva'a is that one is normally for a 30-day period and the other one normally is claimed immediately, so then in fact you wouldn't have the distinction even in the English language between lend and borrow, and presumably you would have to rely upon this Lashon of give it to me. There are other possible nafkaminas between the reasoning of Rashi and the reasoning of Tosfos as well. The Aruch HaShulchan points out that nowadays people aren't so machbid about this. That's what he claims. He says that we see that people use these lashonos to say, can I borrow? So why is that? So he says that it could be because nowadays, even when a person would use a lashon halva'a, we don't have an expectation that somebody's not going to be able to reclaim their loan for 30 days. Nowadays, people reclaim their loans right away. Not only that, but he says that what was the ikar reason for the takana in the first place, that we were worried about shema yichto, because people normally record their transactions. So he says that people normally record monetary transactions, but they don't normally record transactions where they're giving over an object to somebody else. That's what he claims. He says that it's not the normal practice that the normal practice is that if my neighbor asks me for money, so I'm going to record that. But if my neighbor asks me for a bag of sugar, or for a bottle of wine, so that's not something, even if I expect it to eventually be returned, either that bottle or a different bottle, it's not normally the practice to write it down. So he gives those two different explanations as to why he thinks that there might be room to be makel nowadays. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the first explanation, not the second explanation, because the first explanation is from the Mogen Avraham. Mogen Avraham says, "B'medina seinu, it's already the practice that even a hova is not for 30 days. So therefore, there's room to be makel." So this too, whether there would be a difference bisman hazeh, could also depend upon the machlokis between Rashi and Tosus. According to Rashi, that the whole thing is dependent upon, do we say stam hova, lamed yom, and stam sheilah is not lamed yom. So if you live in a society where everything is paid back right away, and therefore there's less of a reason to record it because you're not there, you don't need to record for the future. You can make it, you can claim, you can ask for something back the next day. So then maybe there would be room to be make like the svara of the Mogen Avraham. But if you hold that the whole thing is dependent upon the difference between the lashon of she'ela and the lashon of hava, like the Ri says, so then maybe there would be more room to reject the argument of the Mogen Avraham. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah in the Be'er Halacha and Siman Shin Zayin, I think Divrei HaMashkil Bizman, I think is the caption of this particular discussion. So the Be'er Halacha rejects the Mogen Avraham. He thinks that he has a kasha in the Mogen Avraham. He says that we see from the discussion of the Gemara that the Gemara is very makban on the lashon, that even in a place where somebody might use the lashon of she'ela for a halva, so the Gemara itself says that because of the fact that the lashon that's utilized is bedafka, the lashon that's not the normal lashon, so that's what creates the heter. So he says, so even if you live in a society where the stam halva is less than la minyal, maybe you still have to utilize the lashon she'ela, and you shouldn't be able to rely on the lashon halva. The Mishnah Berurah quotes separately the Prima Gadim, who says that, for example, let's say you live in a society, not like the Mogen Avraham's case, and your society is like in the Gemara, where Stam Halva is 30 days, and a She'ela could be claimed immediately. But let's say in this particular case, the person says, uses the Lashon Halveni, I want you to give me a Halva, but it will be on condition that you can claim it for me right away. You don't have to, it's not going to have to wait 30 days. You're going to be able to claim it for me even the very next day. So do we say that in this case, because the arrangement is arrangement of she'ela, even though the lashon is a lashon of halva'a, that you could be mekel? So Prima Gadim says absolutely not. Absolutely not. Since you're using a lashon halva'a, and this is especially in a situation where stam halva'a is lam and yom, even if you make a side arrangement that it can be collected right away, since you're not using the lashon she'elo, you're not in compliance with the halacha, and therefore this would not be permissible. So the Be'er Halacha says it's the same thing. Even if you live in a society where every halva is going to be less than 30 days, since you're not distinguishing and using a different lashon, therefore you can't rely on the heter to say that it would be the same din, bein b'lashon hava, bein b'lashon she'ela. Okay. So, l'maise, halakha l'maise, I think that the practice that there may be what to rely upon if one uses a lashon of a borrowing, like the Aruch HaShulchan, but it seems to me that if one is kind of, you know, stuck in this situation, that probably the best approach is to utilize the Eitzah of the Ran and to say, Tainli Ve'Echzor, to say, give it to me and I will return it, but I think that one should probably be medactic to actually utilize the Lashon of Ve'Echzor so that it be clear that it's kind of just a very specific lashon that's being used that is intended to contain the transaction within the realm of borrowing, and that's the reason why you're adding the lashon be'exor afterwards. The Gemara also discusses whether there's a ribbis problem over here, because the Gemara, the Mishnah, seems to indicate that this is something that might only be problematic on Shabbos, but during the weekday is perfectly fine. So the Gemara asks, maybe this is against Hillel, because Hillel said, "Lo tilva yishakika lechaverta chitasen adamim shemayukruchitin." that you might have a ripis problem. If you borrow an object, then you're going to return another object. That's called sa'ab is sa'ab. So we made the rabbanon. We don't allow people to borrow one object to return exactly the same type of object because we're worried that at the time that the object is returned, it might be worth more than at the time that it was borrowed. So that's a question. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about a case where it was kind of yatzah hashar, where it was known you're borrowing eggs, and everybody knows that eggs are worth a certain amount. So therefore, the price was already set, the market price was already set, and that's one of the heterim to borrow one object and return the exact same object. Because you can secure the object according to the current market price so that you can make sure it's not paid back at a more more expensive price. So if you look in the Ramah in Hilchos Ribbis, so the Ramah in Hilchos Ribbis in Simen Kof Samach Beis assumes that in fact there is room to be makel, that if you're just borrowing small household items, there isn't a ribbis problem because as the Gemara in Bava Metzia indicates that people are not makbid about small objects. So the Gemara indicates there that that there's room to be makel. Number one, because the Sa'ab is only midrabanan, and Rashi over there says we're not goes there so much when it comes to Sa'ab is-sa'ah that we're going to micromanage even small items that are borrowed between our neighbors. And another explanation is because people are not makbid so much that you loan your neighbor some eggs, and they're going to give you back some eggs. It's not that you're looking for ribbis, you're looking for the eggs to be more valuable. People aren't makbid when it comes to eggs. It's a little bit less valuable, it's a little bit more valuable, that you gave smaller eggs, they give back bigger eggs. The only thing that is mentioned in some of the contemporary ribbis svarim is that you have to be careful not to give back more eggs. That if you gave your neighbor six eggs, so the neighbor shouldn't give back seven eggs, because that looks like it's a clear addition to what was loaned and looks much more like a ribbis problem. That's something that might be permissible. It's brought down separately in Hilchos Ribbis that with Tamidei Chachamim, sometimes we have a more of a kula that Tamidei Chachamim can add a little bit more because it's understood they're giving it as a matana. So that special kula that we have respect to Tamidei Chachamim, to whatever degree we still would apply it, bizman hazeh, does not apply to neighbors. When it comes to just regular neighbors, so we don't say they can give back more, but they can give back the same amount. You gave a bottle of wine, they give back a different bottle of wine. We don't evaluate this bottle of wine was Rashi and the other one is Bartanura some sort of an equivalent scale to say, oh, this one is Moscato d'Asti and this one is White Riesling. See whether there are extreme differences in the quality of the wine. If it's more or less in the same range of the type of wine and the type of value, so that would probably be okay. We probably should be mocked with it to be the same type of wine, if at all possible. But we don't. But it's generally assumed that the neighbors aren't makbid so much. Certainly, if you're going to give one brand of eggs and the other one gives back a different brand of eggs, or one brand of Moscato d'Asti and the other one gives back a different brand of Moscato d'Asti, so that's probably in the ballpark of the heter of the sport down in the Ramah in Hilchos Ribbis. Okay, any questions about She'ela B'Shabbos before we move on?
Yeah. Is there any problem saying, can I borrow your Sefer on Shabbos?
So the Mishnah Berurah says that even when it comes to a Sefer, you can't use the Lashon of Halveni. That even though it's the Tzorach Mitzvah, he says there's no special Tzorach Mitzvah dispensation when it comes to this concern, because the Shema Yechtov consideration, we assume, would apply in any of these types of circumstances. Somehow we're more worried about Shema Yechtov when it comes to a Lashon of Haba, even if you're using a Lashon of Haveni Sifacha. So Mishnah Berurah says that it would still be a problem.
So I have to say
Tehillim B'Achzor? Yeah, Tehillim. You don't have to say B'Achzor. It's a safe. Everybody understands they're never going to get it back.
Give me your safe.
You may as well. When was the last time somebody actually gave you back a safer that you loved them? Yeah.
This isn't exactly a Shaila, but more like a whole question, but promising a donation on Shabbos.
That's fine. That's posting Alex Stalker. You'll have to be posting Alex Stalker.
That seems like it very much would be a violation of, well, it's really financial. There's no objects involved, and you're creating some type
it's a,
of...
So it's a strong self-mitzvah. It's a mitzvah derabim. It's kashbono shel mitzvah. That's the Gemara much earlier in the Masechta. I think Rav Daf Yehuda so said that that's perfectly okay. Poskin atzlaka b'Shabbos, we certainly allow. Okay, so now the Gemara at the top of Kafma Memches Amibes notes that there's a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Beitzah, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, that says Lo Misapkin, Lo Metapkin, Lo Meraktin B'Yomtiv. This is true on Shabbos as well. That you're not allowed to clap. You're not allowed to hit your body, like hit your thigh to a beat. Below Meraktin, and you're not allowed to dance. So why aren't you allowed to do these things? Rashi has a curious lashon with respect to lo misapkin lo metapkin. Rashi says these are things people who do mishum abel. So we don't allow a mourning on Shabbos, and that's on Yontif. This is why it's not permissible. So Tosfos says that that's not necessarily only because of Yontif, because of abelus considerations. Even if somebody is clapping and hitting their thigh because they're very, very happy and they're doing it to a happy beat, it still would be a problem. What's the problem? So the problem is, as Rashi says, with respect to Lo Meraktin, why can't you dance? So Rashi says, L'simcha, it's that part. Rashi says he can't do L'simcha. V'tayim mefarish mesechas beitza, shem yisakin klei shir. And the reason is explained over there because it is, because you might be mesakin klei shir. You might fix a musical instrument because people will get so carried away with their dancing and with their clapping that they'll start playing musical instruments, and then the musical instruments will break, and as a result, you'll come and fix it, and you'll be misaking clay shear. So Tosfos in Beis Daf Lamed Amud Aleph says that nowadays, the Didan, none of this is prohibited, says Tosfos, because we're not so bekin in fixing clay shear. We don't know how to fix clay shear. If musical instrument breaks, we just would look dumbfounded. We wouldn't know what to do. So since we wouldn't know what to do, and we are not capable of fixing it anyway, so therefore the Gzera doesn't apply. So that's a question, whether we follow that Tosfos halacha l'maise. The Beis Yosef in Simin Shin Lamites, I think, says that this Tosfos is similar. So what Tosfos says about Mayim Megulim, that we don't worry about water that's left open all night, that you can't drink it the next day, because what was that based upon? It was based upon snakes that were around, that we drink the water, we don't have snakes, so therefore it's permissible, and so too, it's this, just like this particular Gzeira, the time of the Gzeira doesn't apply anymore, so this is also permissible. So that's a question, if that's really true. So Moshe Feinstein, the Igros Moshe, the face of Baruch Haim Simon Kuf, has a whole arichus about this question, and he says he doesn't think it's the same thing. He thinks that usually if there is some sort of a gezeva by a bezdin of a previous generation, so you need another bezdin to build a chokhmah of a minyan to be certain gezeva. We don't have a bezdin to build a chokhmah of a minyan. He says Maya Megulin was a different story. It would really, me'ikar din, drinking the water was perfectly permissible. It's just there was a kshash rachot that said there were, since there were some snakes that were around in those days, so therefore, because of the kshash rachot, they didn't allow you to do something that me'ikar din was permissible. But once the kshash rachot went away, so therefore the whole zera fell away as well. But when it came to this wasn't based upon the notion of kshash rachot. They made a zera that there's a real problem towards doing any of these actions. It wasn't that normally you could drink water, and in this case, you can't drink water. He says they made it clear you're not allowed to clap, period. You can't clap on Shabbos, and you can't dance on Shabbos, and you can't do these things. So therefore, you really, in this particular case, he holds, wouldn't need a best thing, so the chokhmah of minyan. So what then? It would be the svara of Tosfos. So he says that the svara is that if you look in our Gemara, our Gemara says, we see that people do all these things. They clap their hands, they dance, despite the fact that there's a Mishnah that says they're not allowed to. So the Gemara concludes, that it's better that they be shogigin and not be mezidin, so therefore we leave them alone. So Moshe says, we see that even at the time of the Gemara, this was an example of a gezeira, Moshe uses the lashon was lo pashta, that it didn't spread so widely, it wasn't kept by everybody. So really, they would have rescinded it right then and there. The only reason they didn't rescind it right then and there, despite the fact it was lo pashta, was because the gzeira still made sense, because people knew how to fix musical instruments, and it still was a concern that they would fix musical instruments. But bizman hazeh, when it's still lo pashta, when it's still not something which has spread and been accepted by everybody, plus you no longer have an obligation to keep it on the books because of the fact that nowadays people don't know how to fix musical instruments. So he says that's the svara of Tosfos as to why Tosfos thinks that it's not applicable anymore. He says it's like an anan sadi. that all the Chachamim Sheba Olam, that all of the great rabbis in the entire world, even though we don't have a Beis Din nowadays, but if we would form a Beis Din nowadays, it's an anitzadi that all the rabbis would agree that this needs to be rescinded because it's lo pashta, it wasn't mekubal on all of Klal Yisrael, and that there's no time that it's applicable anymore. So therefore, even though we don't have an official convening of the Beis Din, it's like an anitzadi as if there was a convening of the Beis Din. He says that he's not prepared to rely upon this unequivocally. He thinks that this is just kind of a good limud zchus based on the svara of Tosfos. And he says that certainly a Baal Nefesh should be machmir se'el atzmo. Somebody who's a Baal Nefesh should be machmir to still keep the halacha that, as is recorded on the books, it's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch and Simon Shin Lamites that you can't do these things. So therefore, at least as a matter of chumrah and proper niyug, one should avoid doing it. But he said, but he says that we see with our own eyes that people do this all the time. People do it all the time. So we have to give some sort of an explanation based on Tosfos as to how it is that the din could possibly go away. I know I go to conferences sometimes that Shabbos conferences. I mean these Torah conferences, and people will get up and give speeches. And you'll have all these lay people who are sitting around who are attending the conferences, and at the end of the speech, they'll clap. Oh, it's covered in clap. It's a halakha shulchan aruch. You're not supposed to clap. So what are they doing clapping? I remember I went to one of the conference organizers once, and I said, maybe we should make an announcement. People shouldn't clap. So presumably he worked with the svara of Mutav Shushogin, that it's probably better Shushogin. They're not going to listen anyway. I mean, maybe it's you should give like a bad speech so they won't clap, so that way you know you won't be macho. But he says but it seems like in certain places, maybe in modern Orthodox circles, this has become something of the norm. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it's not accepted as the norm. There's an exception. Maybe if you do Kala'achar Yad, the Mechapa says this is based on a Yerushalmi, that if you clap Kala'achar Yad, this is if you do your clapping Kala'achar Yad, so then there's room to be Mekel. Or one other consideration to be makel is if it's a b'makom mitzvah. That's what the Mishnah Berurah brings down. That if it's b'makom mitzvah, like Simchas Torah, yes, how is it that people dance on Simchas Torah? Simchas Torah mistama should be a problem. So he says that maybe the heter for people being dancing on Simchas Torah is based on this consideration as well. That if it's for Makom Mitzvah, it's number one, the halacha may be not so clear based on Tosfos to begin with, and number two, if it's for Makom Mitzvah, so then he says, L'chvod HaTorah, we would permit it. So it's very interesting, if you look in the Mishnah, I'll take questions in just a moment, if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah says very pointedly, he would only permit it to the Makom Kavod HaTorah. If it's just like a general Makom Mitzvah, he's not so sure. In the Shaar HaTzion, he brings two deos, the Maharshal, and Mama Mordechai as to whether we should be makel across the board. If it's a makom mitzvah, and in the actual text of the Mishnah Berurah, he says that he thinks that even if it's a simchas nisuin, presumably he's talking about like a shevet brachos on Shabbos, he thinks that there isn't room to be makel. He says only the kvod haTorah, only if it's like simchas Torah, you should be makel. But for a shevet brachos, he's not prepared to be makel. In the Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa, the Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa calls from the Sefer Orchos Chaim, where he says that if it's a simchas chasam mekala, you can be makel. Can allow for the dancing and presumably the clapping and all of those things. But the Mishnah Berurah himself was only explicitly makel in the case of Simchas Torah. So it's even not a Yom HaZeh, even with all of the kulos and all of the heterim, it's not, particularly for a Baal Nefesh, it's not so clear that one should be so cavalier about being as makel as the minhag olam seems to have spread much more for the dancing to for people to dance just the stamazoy on Shabbos to clap stamazoy on Shabbos. If it's a shul setting, they're singing zmiros. The Rambam says that even if it's just you're knocking your hand against a piece of wood and doing it in a rhythmic beat, but that's also included in the prohibition. It's not only against your thigh, but even if you're knocking on the door and you go. That would also be problematic on Shabbos. Just to start knock on the door, so that would be okay. I say you're singing zmiros and you want to do it with your hands. So, you know, if you have no rhythm, so presumably that would be okay. But if, you know, you're going to, you know, to put down your hand rhythmically as you're singing the zmiros, unless you have, you're prepared, unless you're comfortable for the broader sort of application of a makom mitzvah, but if you're not prepared, like the Mishnah Berurah has it in to embrace the broader application of makom mitzvah, That could also be a problem, you know, if you're kind of like singing this thing, saying, Kodesh Hilachem Shabbos HaMalka El Tov Batechem Lechaniach Birocha. So that, you know, if you keep on doing it rhythmically, I'm not sure that was so rhythmic, but if you keep
yeah,
on doing it rhythmically,
like
right, I think so. That was probably the case that was, but if you're doing it rhythmically, it could be problematic. So if you're, you know, you're a klutz about it, so maybe that's a little bit better. Yeah.
Rabbi is saying that the broader definition, which includes some plus plus and makala, would also include singing zmiros and stuff like that.
It could. So the Shaar HaTzion, this is in Simen Shin Lamites. Where is Simen Shin Lamites? Hold on. Yes, I got the wrong sibit here. One second. Shin Lamites Sif Gibel. So he brings down over here. Eliyahu Rabba b'shem Yamshel Shlomo Ayin Shem Achshem Mashma Maharshal b'Makom Mitzvah Mei Rashal. It's Mashma from the Maharshal to B'Makom Mitzvah Yeshus Mok Medina Asaros Atosos Sinya Tipuach Berikud. If it's a Makom Mitzvah, you can always rely on the Asaros Atosos when it comes to clapping and knocking your hand rhythmically. Rebeis Yosef L'Mashma Kad. Again, we can't cast Mama Mordechai. So Rebeis Yosef Mama Mordechai. It's not mashma that way. And in the actual text, the Mishnah Berurah, he says, "Yom Simchas Torah Mutal Arake B'Shash Yom Kilusim De Toiva Mishum Kavod Torah Kimi De Leis Bezel Mishum Shavus Abal B'Shar Simchas Shemitzah Kigom Benisu Napidu Rachi Yaser." You see us? He says, "B'Shar Simchas Shemitzah Kigom Benisu Napidu Rachi Yaser."
What about so? According to the opinion, it's matir by Nisuin.
According to that opinion, so there's more room to say that that opinion is accepting the Maharshal, that would perhaps be more makel across the board whenever you have any kind of a Makom Mitzvah situation.
And would that include things like Oneg Shabbos, like Zmiros and Kalbach Friday night?
There would be room to be makel. So some poskim are makel about all of these things on the basis of a broader understanding of the Kula. But in the actual text of the Ramah, so the Rama says, "Had misakin orakten eden or below machinim berhu." The fact that this happens nowadays, so he says that probably the main consideration is not because it's mutter, but because mishum the mutter shishov again mechule. And then he quotes Tosos that he says, "V'yeshov and the misman is that kol shari deren who became asiyas klei shir lekad mixer shem misakin klei shir the milsa lo shkiyaku ve'av efshe shel zeh nagul laka bakol." And that could be the reason why people are lahakil bakol. So then the Mishnah Berurah there says, however, that he thinks that one should not rely upon this. He says, "Rapil v'tipiok v'rikud enkid." He says, number one, this kula is only going on things like dancing and clapping. Certainly not with respect to actually using quasi musical instruments, which is also mentioned in the Makabe. That for sure would be also. Then he says, "Rapil v'tipiok v'rikud enkid daile aniach minak shlomo makom mitzvah." You certainly should not allow the minak shlomo makom mitzvah ela mishum anach lahem. But rather, if it's Shlomo Makom Mitzvah, so then if you're leaving it alone, when people are clapping at conferences, that's based on Nach Lehem, Mutar Sheyu Yu Shogigir. Then the footnote on this particular Sifkot in the Mishnah Berurah, the footnote in the Shaar HaTzion, so he brings the Machlokas as to whether the Makom Mitzvah you really can rely upon this across the board or not. And so if you put together all of these different comments, it seems that he's only really comfortable with Simchas Torah. That's the Mashmos.
With the stacking of the conferences, could you say, like, from Tosos, it's not just only like clay sheer, so it's like the singing, the dancing is the music, then you can't clap, but if you're just clapping and nobody's talking, is that part of the Xera?
Yeah, Bipashis, that's part of the Gezerah. Imitapin Akos Kapel Kafa. It's not only in a case, certainly if you look at Rashi. Rashi wasn't talking about where it was being done, you know, musically, since people are, you know, clapping their hands because of Avelus or whatever. So even Tosfos, who disagrees with that interpretation, doesn't disagree with the application of the principle of Rashi. Apipashtus is referring to any kind of clapping because you're making noise, and once you get into the mode of doing that, so that could lead to doing things more to a beat, and could lead to more of a singing motion and so forth. And could lead to the playing of musical instruments. I hear the deep, but from the pashtus of the sugyas, it doesn't seem that we're only talking about clapping in that particular context. Again, if somebody is clapping afterwards like this, they're doing it with the back of the hand or whatever, so then there's more room to be making because you're reminding yourself that you're not going to come to play musical instruments because you're clapping in sort of in an offbeat and irregular fashion. So that's explicit in the Mechaber based on the Yerushalmi. Masapik lacha yad mutter.
Also, what you said about the Mishpura about the Nisuin can't be like, I know in Europe they would marry on Friday afternoon, the wedding would be Friday night, so can't you be referring to that?
Yeah, but if he's referring, I thought of that, but if he's referring to that, I would think a Kavachomer, if it was a Shevabach, because he wouldn't be.
Yeah, of course, yeah, but I'm saying he said Nisuin would be, he must be Shevabach, but I think.
No, he could be referring to that, but it would certainly carry over.
Right.
Meaning
right.
Wouldn't be any better. Yeah.
I mean, we know that musical instruments were an important part of Avelis at the time, like the mission that you get. Even the Israel gets a flute, two flutes, right? I think at the funeral, every person. So that was a big part of it. That musical instrument. So it could be that it's still in the context of music. It just doesn't seem to make sense that we would say that it would be worse to have clapping in a context where there's no music than in a context where there's music. But it's the Tzorach Mitzvah. That we would be more makil in that case, because it's much more likely, if you think about the Gzera, that a shir would come out in that context.
Yeah, you want to kind of reinforce the argument that Eric is making, that maybe it's completely in a non-musical context, you're clapping your hand because you just want to say that was a nice shir. You know, hear, or something like that.
I think it's shuls where their solution is they stomp. After a
right, so stomping is better because
it's better.
I think in the olden days, before clapping, it's true. I mean, it's not part of some sort of a condemnation of the speech, and I wanted to wipe this guy out. He spoke so terribly. I think before clapping became in vogue, I don't know the clapping is true. I don't know the clapping was always in vogue. It's an interesting sociological question. Just in this particular context of just indicating your approval that you like the particular speech, so you clap. I think that hundreds of years ago they did other things. They banged tables, for example, and if you bang a table non-rhythmically, so presumably that wouldn't even be included in the Gezeirah. It's only like the Rambam says if you're banging rhythmically. So maybe there is an argument to be had there. I haven't seen that argument truthfully, but there is probably some sort of if you want to kind of throw in another sniff, another limud schlus, so there probably is some sort of an argument that could be made. But lemaisa, I haven't seen that argument, and the pashtus is we're talking about any kind of clapping, but it is a valid horror, let's put it that way. It's also just a general form of hashmas kol, as opposed to, make so much of a ruckus on Shabbos. It's also like an ugdin d'chol type of issue, I would think, just the kind of of Shemilsa to throw in that consideration as well.
And then
Kilachiyad would work. So Yerushalmi says explicit Kilachiyad. Again, it wasn't talking necessarily about a large room of a million people doing a Kilachiyad. But in Akinami, that might be a consideration. Don't know. Okay, so last thing I'll mention is a halacha at the very bottom of Kuf Mem Pes Amud Beis, which comes up from time to time. That if a person invited a lot of guests, let's say for Shabbos meal, for Yontif meal, a person invited a lot of guests, so there's a concern that if you're going to look at the list of the guests, the recipes or whatever, that you might come to a race. You see that somebody's not going to show up, or you have a change of heart that maybe you see there are too many guests and you need to remove somebody. So there's a chash that maybe you'll be mochik. The Gemara at the next stop already says that there are two concerns, one Shem and Yimkok, and two Zera Shem and Yikra Bishtari and Yotas. So Mishnah Berurah says that if you're dealing with somebody for whom it's not a concern of Shem and Yimkok, namely it's not the Baal HaBayis, it's, say, the Shamish isn't going to erase it, he doesn't have the authority to erase it, so maybe then it would be permissible, if not for the other concern of Shem and Yikra Bishtari and Yotas, and if it's a Sudas Mitzvah, it's just like Shtar Yotos. You don't have to worry about Shtar Yotos if it's a Makom Mitzvah, it's a Shtar Shal Mitzvah, you're reading a document of Divrei Torah. So too, if it's a Sugas Mitzvah, so maybe if it's done by the Shamish, you don't have either consideration. Maybe you wouldn't have either problem. And he says that in general, if you're dealing with a Shamish, you're not dealing with a Baal HaBayis, but you're dealing with an actual Shamish. So maybe then there wouldn't be ever a problem. You would never have a problem, even if it wasn't a mitzvah gathering. You can argue that whenever you have people coming together on Shabbos, it's a mitzvah gathering. But he says, no, even if it's not necessarily a Sudas Mitzvah, maybe it's always like a separate takana, that it's always a good thing that if it's not the Baal HaBayis, you don't have to worry about Shem HaYimchok, that a Shamish should always have access to this paperwork to make sure that he invites the right people. Because we know from the story of Kamtzu Bar Kamtzu, what a terrible calamity can occur if you end up inviting the wrong people. So therefore, if it's the shamish, it's the maid, it's the butler. I don't know how many people have maids or butlers, but if it's the maid or the butler, maybe in a stam house nowadays, the husband is like the butler. You know, the wife is the one who's doing all the inviting, and then, you know, the husband can look at the list, and the husband's going to be terrified to embrace anybody, right? You know, I mean, so, you know, his wife is the one in charge. So, I don't know. The Mishnah doesn't say that a husband might have the din of a shamish, but I was thinking maybe. So he thinks that with respect to a shamish, that you wouldn't have to worry about these considerations, possibly, because it's very important that you make sure you have the right people. I know that when we invite people, some of the yontif meals, we always have a lot of people over for all the yontif meals, like a tzukkis in particular. So we have kind of a smallish sukkah. I don't think it's such a small sukkah. My wife thinks it's a small sukkah, but she'd like to invite 100 people. So, you know, we can invite maybe 18 people in our sukkah. So every single meal, we always have a lot of people. And then my wife, you know, has in her mind, she has like mental notes, or she writes down in her planner the various people at the different meals. And then comes yontif, we never look at anybody, and we try to just kind of like, you know, remember sort of, you know, in general, who's going to come. We never remember a thing. There'll be some meals that we think 5 people are coming, 20 people will come, and other, you know, so it's over. But somehow we manage anyway. So it's never, you know, sometimes as long as you have a kind of an easygoing attitude that you have enough food that you're prepared to service everybody who comes, so then these don't have to be problems. But in the event that it might be a problem, so there could be a special dispensation for a shamish to be able to read a list. Okay. So,